The sun breaks through the last shreds of mist hanging over a forest of tall pines. On a slope overlooking an idyllic blue lake, three figures begin to materialize: Kirk, McCoy, and Spock. They gaze around appreciatively. Spock takes readings on his tricorder.
Look at those pine trees.
And that lake.
I swear that's honeysuckle I smell.
I swear that's a little orange blossom thrown in. It's unbelievable. Growth. Exactly like that of Earth, on a planet half a galaxy away. What are the odds on such duplication?
Astronomical, Captain. The relative size, age, and composition of this planet makes it highly improbable that it would evolve similarly to Earth in any way.
They come across an obelisk on a stone plinth.
What in blazes is that?
Analysis, Spock?
An alien metal of some kind, an alloy resistant to probe. Readings can't even measure its age accurately.
Spock climbs the steps of the plinth and examines some symbols on the obelisk.
These incised symbols are fascinating, evidently some form of writing.
Any theories about what it is?
Negative, Captain. But structures of this complexity require extremely sophisticated building apparatus, the kind usually found in cultures surpassing or equaling our own.
Meadows and no meteor craters, the whole place is an enigma, biologically and culturally.
What's the nearest concentration of life forms, Mr. Spock?
Spock sweeps his tricorder around.
Bearing 117 Mark IV.
And how much time did you say we have to investigate?
If we are to divert the asteroid, which is on a collision course with this planet, we must warp out of orbit within 30 minutes. Every second we delay arriving at the deflection point compounds the problem, perhaps past solution.
You did say 30 minutes.
Yes, sir.
Then let's go. Let's find out what life forms are blessed by this environment.
On the far side of the lake, they see an encampment of teepees and hide-covered buildings. Several canoes are drawn up on the shore. Villagers busy themselves with their tasks.
What they look like, I'd swear they're American Indians.
They are, Doctor. A mixture of Navajo, Mohegan, and Delaware, I believe. All among the more advanced and peaceful tribes.
It's like discovering Atlantis. Or Shangri-La. Mr. Spark, is it possible there's a more evolved civilization somewhere else on this planet? One capable of building that obelisk or developing a deflector system?
Highly improbable, Captain. Sensor probes indicate only one type of life form here.
Shouldn't we contact them, Jim? Tell them?
Tell them what? That an asteroid's coming to smash their world into atoms?
Too primitive to grasp the concept of space flight, Doctor. Our appearance here would only serve to confuse and frighten them.
We've got a job to do. Let's get back to the Enterprise.
As they stroll away beneath the trees, Kirk casts a wistful eye back at the Indian village.
What's the matter, Jim?
What? Oh, nothing. Just so peaceful. Uncomplicated, no problems, no command decisions. Just living.
Typical human reaction to an idyllic natural setting. Back in the 20th century, we referred to it as the Tahiti syndrome. It's particularly common to overpressured leader types like starship captains.
Tahiti syndrome. Let's go take care of that asteroid. But first, I want another look at that obelisk.
Alone, Kirk climbs the stone steps of the obelisk plinth.
Doctor?
Yes?
I suggest that any further research on your part be delayed until after we have diverted the asteroid.
Kirk touches some of the symbols on the side of the metal obelisk and takes out his communicator.
Kirk to Enterprise.
Yes, sir.
A stone slides away beneath his feet and Kirk disappears into the plinth. The stone slides back into place. Lights wink on a control panel and an electrical flash strikes Kirk. He collapses over a console covered with more of the strange symbols.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the starship Enterprise. Its five-year mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Star Trek, created by Gene Roddenberry, starring William Shatner. Also starring Leonard Nimoy as Mr. Spock and DeForest Kelly as Dr. McCoy. The Paradise Syndrome, written by Margaret Armen, directed by Judd Taylor.
Captain's log, stardate 4842.6. First Officer Spock commanding. Numerous search parties and repeated sensor probes of the area have failed to locate Captain Kirk. Spock to Enterprise.
Enterprise, come in, Mr. Spock.
Prepare to beam us up, Mr. Scott. We're warping out of orbit.
Leaving? You can't be serious, Spock.
Doctor, that asteroid is almost as large as your Earth's moon. Far enough away, the angle necessary to divert it enough to avoid destruction is minute. But as the asteroid approaches this planet, the angle becomes so great that even the power of a starship...
The devil with an asteroid! It won't get here for 2 months, Spock!
If we arrive at the deflection point in time, it may not get here at all.
In the meantime, what about Jim?
Once the asteroid has been diverted, we'll return here and resume the search.
That may be hours from now. He may be injured or dying.
Spock picks up 2 stones.
Doctor, assume this is the planet we're on. This is the approaching asteroid. If we don't get to that deflection point in time, it will become physically impossible to divert this asteroid. In that case, everyone on this planet will die, including the captain.
Can a few more minutes matter, Spock?
In the time it has taken me to explain the problem, the asteroid has moved from here to here. The longer we delay, the less the likelihood of being able to divert it.
Scowling, McCoy thinks about this and tosses his stone back to the ground beside the obelisk. Spock opens his communicator.
Beam us up, Mr. Scott.
They vanish. Kirk wanders the room inside the plinth.
Where am I? What place is this?
He kneels on the floor by the desk console, picks up the phaser he dropped when he fell and looks at it, and then the communicator.
What are these? I feel I should know. They're familiar, and yet unfamiliar. How did I get here? Who am I? Try to remember.
Kirk wanders the dimly lit chamber with its walls carved from rock, its alien symbols and computers. A shaft of light penetrates the gloom as a stone slides away at the top of a flight of steps. Kirk climbs them and finds himself once more on the top of the plinth. 2 young Indian women are approaching with shallow baskets of fruit and food.
Wait.
They see Kirk appearing from the plinth. As the stone cover slides shut, they put down their baskets, drop to their knees, and cover their faces. Kirk looks down at them, bewildered. The bolder of the 2 young women uncovers her face, gets to her feet, and climbs the stone steps towards Kirk. She's wearing a short fringed buckskin dress and a headband around her long black hair. She takes Kirk's hand and presses it to her forehead.
Who are you?
We are your people. We've been waiting for you to come to us.
Kirk looks around, mystified. Back on board the Enterprise.
Captain's log, stardate 4843.6. First Officer Spock commanding. We've been en route to the asteroid for several hours. Our delay on the planet's surface has made it imperative that we proceed at maximum warp speed for a period which exceeds the recommended safety margin.
I can't give you warp 9 much longer, Mr. Spock. These engines are beginning to show signs of stress.
Stress or not, we cannot reduce speed. I do not intend to miss that deflection point.
All right, but we're moving further into the danger range all the time. If these circuits...
Objection noted, Mr. Scott. Carry on.
Down in engineering, Scotty turns and looks in dismay at the main power conduits glowing red. On the planet, Kirk sits inside the thatched and hide-covered meeting tent with three tribesmen.
Iramani has said that you appeared to her and to her handmaiden from the walls of the temple, just as our legend foretells. We do not doubt the words of our priestess, but these are troubled times, and we must be sure.
I'll answer anything I can, but as I told you, many things are strange to me.
He knows nothing of our danger. How can he save us?
It is against custom to interrupt the tribal elder at council, even for the medicine chief.
Elder, words will not save us when the skies darken. We must be certain. I say he must prove he is a god.
Our skies have darkened 3 times since the harvest. The last time, worst of all. Our legend predicts such danger and promises that the wise ones who planted us here will send a god to save us. One who can rouse the temple's spirit and make the sky grow quiet. Can you do this?
Kirk looks up hesitantly at the gray-haired elder and the medicine chief.
I came from the temple, as Miramani said, and it was a beginning for me here. But I came from the sky, too. Only I can't remember. I can't remember.
Salish, a terrible thing has happened. The boy was attending the fish nets, and he became entangled in them and sank to the bottom of the river. Lumo brought him up quickly, but he doesn't move.
Salish, the medicine chief, puts his ear to the boy's chest and prizes his eyelid open.
There is no sound in the body. There is no light in the eyes. He will move no more. Wait a moment.
As Salish gets up, Kirk kneels beside the boy's body. He feels for a pulse and then begins a standard CPR procedure, checking the boy's airways, tilting his head back, and beginning mouth-to-mouth resuscitation. Miramani, Salish, and the tribal leader look on in astonishment as Kirk blows air into the boy's chest, making it rise and fall. Kirk moves to the boy's feet, takes his ankles, and forces his bent legs upwards towards his chest. Salish tries to intervene.
Wait!
Kirk repeats the procedure, then vigorously rubs the boy's leg. The boy coughs and splutters. The tribesman who brought the boy in kneels over him.
He'll be all right now.
My people are grateful.
It's a simple technique. Goes way back.
He frowns, puzzled.
Way back.
Only God can breathe life into the dead. Do you still question?
Salish looks down at the boy, and then over at Kirk.
Give him the medicine badge.
Salish stares hard at Kirk, who seems about to decline, but then stops. Miramani, the priestess, approaches Salish, tentatively takes his headband from him, and places it on Kirk's head. The headband has a metal badge at the front that shows a motif of the obelisk outside. Miramani, the warrior, and the tribal elder all cover their faces and bow to Kirk. Salish joins them unwillingly. Kirk seems uncertain how to respond. Salish uncovers his face and takes a long, hard look at the god from the sky. The Enterprise approaches the asteroid. McCoy stands beside Spock in the captain's chair. Sulu brings up the helm scanner.
Deflection point -7.
Full power, Mr. Scott.
The relays will reject the overload, Mr. Spock.
Then bypass the relays, go to manual control.
Do that, we'll burn out the engines.
I want full power, Mr. Scott.
Aye, sir. All right, you lovelies. Hold together.
He shakes a doom-laden head as he jabs the switches.
Full power, Mr. Spock.
Magnification factor 12, Mr. Sulu.
Aye, sir.
The large, irregular-shaped rock fills the view screen.
Deflection point minus 4.
All engines stop. Hold position here.
At the helm of the Enterprise, Sulu readies the deflectors.
All engines stop, sir.
Prepare to activate deflectors.
Aye, sir.
In engineering, Scotty checks the dilithium crystal pod. Chekhov looks up from his console.
Power dropping, sir.
Engineering, maintain full power. Full power.
Dilithium crystal circuit's failing, sir. We'll have to replace it.
Not now.
Zero. Deflection point. Now, sir.
Activate deflectors.
A gold beam shoots out from the Enterprise and strikes the asteroid.
Power dropping, sir.
Chekhov and Uhura watch anxiously as the deflector beam dies down.
Rear deflection, Mr. Sulu.
Not enough, Mr. Spock. It's only 0.0013 degrees.
Engineering to bridge. Recircuit power to engines. Maximum speed, heading 37, mark 010.
Aye, sir.
That heading will put us directly in the asteroid's path, sir.
Correct, Mr. Chekhov. I intend to retreat in front of that asteroid until we can employ all power on phaser beams.
What for?
To destroy it. A narrow beam concentrated on a single spot will split that mass.
It might also cripple the ship. Then we would be crushed by the asteroid.
Incorrect. We'll still be able to get out of its path by use of impulse power.
Jim won't be able to get out of its path.
That, Doctor, is another calculated risk we must take.
On the planet, Miramami fills a water skin from the lake.
Miramami.
Salish looks at the buckskins and the water she's carrying.
What are you doing?
I must see to the needs of the god, as is my duty.
You should be working on our ritual cloak.
There will be no ritual between us now, Salish.
What do you mean? We cannot go against tradition.
It is because of tradition that I cannot marry you.
But you are promised to me.
That was before he came.
Tribal priestess and medicine chief are always joined.
He is medicine chief now. Salish, choose another. Any maiden would be honored to join with you.
I wish no other.
The beautiful, dark-eyed priestess looks at Salish sadly.
You have no choice.
She lowers her eyes and turns away.
Miramani, if you could choose, would you choose me?
Miramani looks up at him with compassion, but then lowers her eyes and turns away. Salish watches her go bitterly, then turns towards the lake and stands at the shore, looking out over the blue waters. In the meeting tent, Kirk is hollowing out a gourd to make into an oil lamp. Miramani comes in behind him and hangs the water skin on a peg on the central post. She puts the buckskin jacket and trousers down in front of Kirk and kneels, covering her face with her hands.
Perhaps you would like to bathe now.
Miramani, tell me about the wise ones.
Tell? But a god knows everything.
Not this one. Tell me.
The wise ones brought us here from far away. They chose a medicine chief to keep the secret of the temple and to use it when the sky darkens.
Secrets of the temple.
She looks at his uniform.
There are no lacings. How is this thing removed?
The secrets were passed on from father to son.
Yes, how does this open?
Well, why doesn't Salish use it? Why are the people in danger?
His father did not wish to share his power too soon. He died before he told Salish the secret.
Kirk gets to his feet as two women come in with baskets of fruit and lay them on the fur-covered pallet at his side. They bow and cover their faces. The tribal elder enters carrying a decorated staff.
Our people rejoice and wish to honor your name, but I did not know what you wish to be called. What may I tell them?
Kirk frowns and turns away, trying to remember.
Kirk.
Kirk turns back and raises a hand. The two squaws take it as a signal to leave. Disappointed, the elder watches them go.
Have we displeased you?
No, everything is fine.
Then it must be ourselves, the way we live. Perhaps we have not improved as quickly as the wise ones wish.
Your land is rich, your people happy. Who could be displeased with that?
But there is something. Tell us. We will change it.
I can't tell you anything. All I can tell you is that I'm happy and peaceful here. I'm not sure, but I think I've never felt that way before.
The gray-haired elder makes obeisance and leaves the hut. Kirk watches him go, turns back, and takes Miramani by the shoulders.
Why are they so sure I can help them?
Well, you came from the stone metal. And did you not bring life to the child?
Yes, but I...
He puts a hand to his head, distressed. Miramani comes towards him.
I need time to remember.
She puts a hand towards his shoulder, then hesitates.
Here there is much time. For everything.
Gently, she strokes his shoulder. He turns towards her. On board the Enterprise...
Coordinates, Mr. Chekhov.
Tau 8.7... Beta 0.041.
That is our target, the asteroid's weakest point.
Almost dead center, sir.
Lock all phases on that mark. Maximum intensity, narrow beam. I want to split that fissure wide open.
You sound like you're cutting a diamond.
Very astute, Doctor.
All phases locked, sir.
We'll fire in sequence and continue firing as long as Mr. Scott can maintain power.
Standing by, sir.
Fire phasers.
Phaser one firing.
That Vulcan won't be satisfied till these panels are a puddle of lead.
Phaser two firing.
Main relays out again, Mr. Scott.
Phaser four firing. All phasers fired, sir.
Rig for simultaneous firing, Mr. Sulu. Commence simultaneous bombardment.
In engineering, the chamber containing the main power conduits starts to flash. Scotty looks on in despair.
My parents. My poor parents.
In the hut on the planet's surface, Kirk lies on a fur-covered pallet on his back, eyes closed. He's dressed in a suit of fawn-fringed buckskin. He opens his eyes with a start as Miramani comes in and kneels beside him.
The ritual cloak is finished. If it pleases you, I would like to name the joining day.
The joining day?
I'm the daughter of the chief. Tribal law betroths me to our leader. If there's another, I will step aside.
He shakes his head.
No, Miramani, there's no one else in my mind or my heart.
He gives her a gentle smile.
God's wish is above tribal law.
Kirk smiles and nods, stroking her long black hair.
Name the joining day.
She smiles back at him.
The sooner our happiness together begins, the longer it will last. Tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
They kiss passionately in Spock's quarters on the Enterprise.
And don't ask for any more warp 9 speeds, Mr. Spock. Our star drive is completely burned out. The only thing we have left is impulse power.
Estimated repair time.
Hang on here in space? Forever! The only thing that'll fix these poor darlings is the nearest repair base.
I've already surmised that. Thank you, Mr. Scott.
Well, Spock, you took your calculated risk in your calculated Vulcan way, and you lost. You lost for us, you lost for that planet, and you lost for Jim.
I accept the responsibility, Doctor.
And my responsibility is the health of this crew. You've been driving yourself too hard, and I want you to get some rest.
Mr. Chekhov, resume heading 883, Mark 4-1.
Back to that planet without warp speed, it'll take months, Spock.
Exactly 59.223 days, Doctor. And that asteroid will be 4 hours behind us all the way.
Well, then what's the use? We might not be able to save the captain even if he still is alive. We might not be able to save anything, including the ship.
He looks back at Spock, who's staring at footage of the obelisk and the symbols on his view screen.
You haven't heard a word I've said. All you've been doing is staring at that blasted obelisk.
Another calculated Vulcan risk, Doctor.
McCoy strides out. In her tent, Miramani is being dressed by the other women.
This joining means the end of darkness. It's a time for joy for all my people.
Salish looks in at the doorway and vanishes without a word. At the obelisk, the tribal elder decorates Kirk's face.
You will wait until I walk the holy path to the Earth Lodge first, to give me time to tell the priestess that you follow, and that the joining will take place.
The elder goes. Kirk looks up into the sky and opens his arms wide in rapture.
I have found paradise. Surely no man has ever attained such happiness.
He hugs his arms around his body. Later, as he walks towards the Earth Lodge, Salish leaps out in front of him with a knife.
Get out of my way, Salish.
Even though you be a god, Kirak, I cannot permit this joining.
Nobody's asking for your permission.
Then you must strike me dead.
I have no intention of striking you dead.
Salish lunges at Kirk, who dodges but gets a nick on the hand.
You bleed! Bleed, Kirak! Behold a god who bleeds! Behold a god who bleeds!
He dives at Kirk, who dodges, sending Salish sprawling. Kirk jumps on him, but Salish plants a foot in Kirk's belly and throws him. They both leap to their feet. Kirk swings on a sapling and drop kicks the Indian. Salish gets up and stabs at Kirk. Kirk dropkicks him again. Kirk throws Salish and grabs his knife hand.
Kill me. Kill me, Kirak. For I will not rest until I prove to my people that you are no god.
Kirk shakes his head, throws the knife away, and strides off, leaving Salish on the ground. Later, in the Earth Lodge, the tribe dress Kirk in a ceremonial feathered cloak. He walks, arms outspread, towards Miramani. She stands before him. Together they turn and face the tribal elder. The Enterprise and the asteroid head towards the planet. McCoy comes into Spock's quarters.
I thought you were reporting to sickbay.
There isn't time, Doctor. I must decipher those obelisk symbols. They're a highly advanced form of cipher writing.
You've been trying to do that ever since we started back to that planet. 58 days.
I'm aware of that, Doctor. I'm also aware that when we arrive at the planet, we'll have barely 4 hours to effect rescue. I believe those symbols are the key.
Well, you won't read them by killing yourself. You've hardly eaten or slept for weeks. Now, if you don't let up, you're going to collapse.
I'm not hungry, Doctor. And under stress, we Vulcans can do without sleep for weeks.
Well, your Vulcan metabolism is so low it can hardly be measured, and it's for the pressure, that green ice water you call blood.
My physical condition is not important, Doctor. that obelisk is.
Well, my diagnosis is exhaustion, brought on from overwork and guilt. You're blaming yourself for crippling this ship just as we blamed you. Well, we were wrong. So are you. You made a command decision. Jim would have done the same. My prescription is rest. Now, do I have to call the security guards to enforce it?
Spock half turns towards McCoy, but doesn't meet his eye. Instead, he slowly steps into his sleeping quarters and lies down. McCoy goes. Spock immediately gets back up, goes through to his desk, and sits down in front of the viewscreen, gazing at the symbols on the obelisk, hands clasped in front of his chest. On the planet, Miramani runs laughing through the woods. Kirk, bare-chested, runs after her.
Miramani!
He chases her around a tree. She dodges out of his way and runs off. He no longer wears the medicine chief's headband, but has a native medallion around his neck.
Miramani!
He catches her, takes her in his arms, and kisses her. They drop to their knees.
Each time your arms hold me is as joyous as the first.
I'm happy. I'm so happy.
But his face clouds.
If it weren't for the dreams, my mind would be completely at peace.
I thought you no longer had the dreams. That you no longer saw the strange lodge which moves through the sky.
They've come back. They were gone for a while, but they've come back. And I see faces, too, very dim. I feel I should know them. I feel my place is with them, not here. I don't deserve this happiness.
I have a gift for you.
Gift?
He smiles and shakes his head, waiting.
What?
It may make you happy. Wait.
These last few weeks, my love for Miramani grows stronger with each passing day. However, the dreams return every night. Fragments of memories. I can almost get hold of them, and then...
Miramani returns with an oval-shaped wooden hoop covered with hide. A papoose.
I bear your child.
Kirk looks astounded, lowers his eyes, lost for words, then looks up at Miramani and smiles.
You.
Impulsively, he kisses her. Kirk looks about contentedly. Later in their hut, Kirk has poured water onto the earth and draws with a stick.
A canal. And with it, we'll bring the water from the lake right to the lodge. And we can expand the system, see? And irrigate the fields and double the food supply.
And with the power of the lamp. Lamp?
Lamp.
Which turns night into day, we can cook twice as much food and as you taught us,
preserve.
Preserve. For times of famine. So that is why you made the lamp, Kurok. So that I would never know when it was night and I would be forever cooking.
Oh, no. No. That's not why I made the lamp at all, to keep you forever cooking.
He kisses her. Miramani pulls back in alarm.
It's only the wind. And the thunder.
I act like a stupid child. I have nothing to fear. You are here.
But she goes to the door and looks out into the night. Wind shakes the branches of the tall pine trees.
It is time.
Time?
To go to the temple. The people will be waiting.
Why?
To save them.
But it's only the wind.
can't harm them.
The wind is only the beginning. Soon the sky will darken, the lake will go wild, and the earth will tremble. Only you can save us.
But I can't do anything about the wind or the sky.
If we do not go now, it will be too late. You must go inside the temple and make the blue flame come out.
I don't know how to get inside the temple.
But you are a god.
Salish and the Elder come in.
Karak! Karak!
Why are you not at the temple, Kirak? Soon the ground will begin to tremble. The people need your help.
We'll go to the caves. It'll be safe there.
The caves? Surely a legend can do more than that for his people.
When the ground trembles, the caves are not safe, Kirok. If you do not rouse the temple spirit, we will all die.
There is nothing you cannot do, my husband.
Well, what do you wait for, God? Your robes?
Kirk takes his medicine chief's headband and goes to the door.
Take care of Miramani.
He disappears into the night. Salish turns and looks back at Miramani with cruel satisfaction. Dust blows through the air around the obelisk as Kirk runs up to it. He mounts the stone plinth and looks around, staring at the symbols. Salish steps from behind a tree and watches as Kirk bangs his fist impotently on the obelisk. Kirk looks up into the sky and raises his arms into the air. Salish watches triumphantly. On board the Enterprise, McCoy comes into Spock's quarters. Spock is sitting by his bed with his Vulcan lyre.
I prescribed sleep.
You prescribed rest, Doctor. The symbols on the obelisk are not words. They are musical notes.
Musical notes? You mean it's nothing but a song?
In a way, yes. Other cultures, among them certain Vulcan offshoots, use musical notes as words. The tones correspond roughly to an alphabet.
Were you able to make any sense out of the symbols?
Yes, the obelisk is a marker, just as I thought. It was left by a super race known as the Preservers. They passed through the galaxy rescuing primitive cultures which were in danger of extinction and seeding them, so to speak, where they could live and grow.
I've always wondered why there were so many humanoids scattered through the galaxy.
So have I. Apparently, the Preservers account for a number of them.
That's probably how the planet has survived all these centuries. The Preservers put an asteroid deflector on the planet.
Which has now become defective and is failing to operate.
And we have to find that deflector and put it back into working order. Otherwise...
Precisely, Doctor.
Salish leads the villagers to the obelisk.
There's the false one!
They stone Kirk. Miramani runs up. They stone Kirk and Miramani.
As we all do!
Imposter!
You lie to us!
Kill him!
Not a god! We'll kill you now!
Spock and McCoy beam down to the planet in time to see Kirk and Miramani collapse under the hail of rocks. As they run up to the obelisk, the villagers turn and flee. McCoy and Spock run to the top of the plinth, crouch down beside Kirk, and roll him onto his back.
I need Nurse Chapel.
Spock to Enterprise.
Come in, Mr. Spock.
We've located the captain. Beam down Nurse Chapel with an emergency surgical kit.
Kirk raises his head groggily.
My wife. Is she all right?
Wife?
Hallucinations?
Nurse Chapel materializes.
Miramani.
Nurse Chapel injects Miramani with a hyperspray and scans her. She glances up at Spock and steps over Miramani to get to Kirk. Spock cradles Miramani's head in his lap.
The nurse has given you something to ease the pain. Why were you being stoned?
She struggles for breath.
Kurok could not get back into the temple.
Naturally, since he did not come from there.
I saw him come.
She lapses into unconsciousness. Spock lays her down and turns round to watch McCoy in Nurse Chapel, tending to Kirk.
Does he recognize us?
His brain is unimpaired. Everything else is functioning normally except his memory.
Can you help him?
It'd take time.
Time, Dr. McCoy, is the one thing we do not have in abundance. Spock here.
Tracking report, sir. 65 minutes to end of safety margin.
Report noted. Doctor, is he strong enough for the Vulcan mind fusion?
We have no choice.
Spock kneels by Kirk's head and places his fingers on Kirk's temples and cheeks. Kirk's eyes are half open, and as the mind meld progresses, he struggles weakly.
I am Spock. You are James Kirk. Our minds are moving closer, 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 James Kirk, closer.
No.
James Kirk.
Miramani! No. Miramani.
Our minds are one. I am
Kirok.
I am
Kirok.
I am
Spock sits bolt upright.
What is it?
His mind. He's an extremely dynamic individual.
Spock raises his eyebrows as if clearing his mind. Kirk comes round and sits up.
It worked.
He sees Miramani lying on the stone slab at his side and leans down beside her, taking her face in his hands.
Captain, were you inside this structure?
Yes. What's inside is loaded with scientific equipment.
This obelisk is one huge deflector mechanism. It is imperative that we get inside immediately. Captain, we do not have much time.
He looks up reluctantly.
McCoy.
McCoy and Nurse Chapel kneel beside Miramani with the medical kit.
I don't know how to get inside.
If we are not able to gain entry and activate the deflector mechanism within the next 50 minutes, this entire planet will be destroyed.
The key must be in these symbols. We've got to decipher them.
I already have to some extent, Captain. They are musical notes.
You mean entry can be gained by playing certain notes on a musical instrument?
That would be one method. Another would be a series of tonal qualities spoken in their proper sequence.
Give me your communicator. Tonal control, consonants and vowels. I must have hit it accidentally when I contacted the ship.
If you could remember your exact words, Captain.
Kirk opens his communicator.
Kirk to Enterprise.
Aye, Captain.
A slab at their feet slides open.
Scotty, if the deflector isn't activated within 20 minutes, get out of orbit. Get the Enterprise out of the danger zone. The landing party is expendable. The Enterprise isn't. Kirk out.
Miramani.
He kisses her.
Bones, stay with her. Do what you can.
Kirk follows Spock down the steps into the plinth. Spock is gazing at the control desk and its surrounding symbols.
It is similar to deflector panels I've seen, Captain, but far more complicated.
Careful. I must have hit something accidentally.
A beam caught me, and that's when I stopped remembering.
Probably a memory beam. You must have activated it out of sequence.
There's more symbols. Can you read them?
I do have an excellent eye for musical notes, Captain. They would seem to indicate that this series of relays activated in their proper
Spock,
sequence.
Spock, just press the right button.
Spock presses a button. The control panel lights up, and a beam shoots from the top of the obelisk. It strikes the asteroid, pushing it away. Kirk and Spock look round as the obelisk shakes. In Kirk's hut, McCoy scans Miramani and looks round at his captain standing at the door in his buckskins. McCoy gets up and goes over to him.
Oh, she had bad internal injuries, Jim.
Will she live?
No.
McCoy lowers his eyes awkwardly. Kirk looks down at Miramani, lying on her back on the bed of furs, seemingly unmarked. He goes over and stands beside her. McCoy moves away towards the door. Kirk takes Miramani in his arms. She opens her eyes.
Kirk, it is true you are safe.
And so are your people, Miramani.
She smiles.
I knew you would save them, my chief.
He smiles down at her.
When I am better, it will be as it was, will it not?
If that's what you want.
We will live long and happy lives. I will bear you many strong sons.
Kirk cradles her head.
Love you always.
And I love you, Miramani. Always.
She swallows with difficulty. He bends over her and kisses her gently on the lips. She smiles and closes her eyes, then opens them again.
Each kiss is as the first.
They smile lovingly at one another. Miramani's head falls back onto the animal skins. Kirk gazes down sadly into her dead face, unwilling to release her or take his eyes off her. This audio description was written and produced at IMS. For the Sci-Fi Channel,